Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Springtime in Lincoln. This is the Pick Six Podcast. I'm Evan Bland, along with Sam McEwen, Tom Chattel. And, you know, there's light at the end of the spring practice tunnel. Nebraska's going to wrap up this weekend with the red-white game. We don't exactly know what the format's going to be yet. Matt Rhule's going to talk about that on Thursday. But finally, sort of a little bit of clarity, maybe a little bit of, you know, eyes on evaluation of some young players that have gone through this spring we've heard a lot about. So we're going to talk a lot of spring game here to start. We'll also get to a little bit of basketball and baseball as we go along. How excited are you guys to actually see something at least resembling live football after all that we've heard from coaches and players through camp?
Yeah, I'm always excited to see live football, especially when it's been a while. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of new pieces to the puzzle. I just want to see if it's smooth, if it's fast, if it's if guys know they know what they're doing. Because it's supposed to be okay. Well, we know what's expected. Now it's not about what you do; it's about how you do it. So that's where the program is right now. So yeah, obviously the quarterbacks. I don't know what they'll do or what they'll have them do, a lot of people have never seen Dylan Raiola in a uniform. They've seen him on film or tape, obviously. The Polynesian Bowl, but a lot of people have never seen Danny McCalin. He's been in our neighborhood for the last few years, but they didn't get out to a game. There's a lot of curiosity here. I asked the readers, what do you want to see out of a spring game? And one guy responded, I want to know that we're going to be 8-4 or 9-3 next year. I said, well, we're not going to show that. I could have seen that on Saturday, but hopefully you won't see a lot of turnovers or a lot of mistakes. And that's probably pretty common in the spring, maybe, but I guess we assume or hope that this program is a little bit ahead of all that. So, live football, vanilla, but can the quarterbacks throw a pass from here to there without it being intercepted? And we'll all take a cue from Matt Rhule at the end and go, the offense had a big day, we'll be mad at the defense. If the defense had a big day, we'll question the offense. So it's spring in Lincoln.
Yeah, I think scale of 1 to 10, 9 for the offense, 4 for the defense in terms of excitement level. I think Nebraska's defense has a lot of proven commodities, some of whom probably won't play in the spring game or might be very limited in the spring game. And so I think this is going to be a game about how the offensive guys sort of mesh and gel together. I don't think you'll see necessarily all of the offensive linemen. If you were going to ask me, well, what are the most proven positions on the team? I would say every position on defense in the offensive line. And so I think you're going to see the other positions, more guys play. Probably going to see each quarterback get three, maybe four drives. I don't know, somewhere in there, probably at least three. So they'll have some opportunities. And I do think it's going to be relatively equal in the snaps. Maybe the freshman will get one extra because Heinrich Harburg's had got a season under his belt. But yeah, I think there's an excitement level for me there. I'm excited to see Dylan Raiola and Danny Kalen and Ja'Cory Barney at receiver and Dante Dowdell at running back and Quentin Ives and you know, some of the guys that maybe we haven't had a chance to see much of because they either showed up last summer and they didn't play, or they just showed up, or, you know, they haven't necessarily been around a lot, or they just transferred in. So I'm excited about the offense. And I think it's important to some degree that the offense has a decent day. I'm not saying it has to be whatever it was in the scrimmage, but I do think you want your offense to go out there and do some things that give it momentum for the offseason. You would probably prefer that it is not 10-7, you know, like you want your offense to go out there and look crisp and make some big plays and do some of the things that you hope that they do next season, because I don't think you're going to be facing vintage Tony White Nebraska defense that we saw, I don't know, against Louisiana Tech or against Illinois. Like, I don't think this is going to be that. I think it's going to be kind of a hodgepodge of guys and a lot of older guys sitting out. So there's going to be some opportunities to make plays against that defense, and I'm sure that Nebraska's staff wants that to happen.
So, okay. So, I mean, obviously quarterback is the headliner of the spring game. Let's get into that a little bit. And so, like, I feel like what we've seen in a limited amount of time and what we've heard coaches and players say about Dylan Raiola is, hey, he's got elite arm strength. He can improvise. He's got good pocket presence. And I think the thing about Kalen has been, hey, he can read a defense quickly. He can get the ball out fast. He knows where to go. And then you've got Harburg, who's retooling his throwing mechanics, who Marcus Satterfield said this week is slowing down sort of his thought process a little bit as he's gone through that. So, like, what do you need to see from any of those scholarship quarterbacks to sort of that would move the needle or change the perception of what you've gotten from them to this point that you would see in the spring game?
I just want to see fundamentals. I just want to see. We've had so many quarterbacks over the years who I can't put the ball in the money, and have been, you know, they throw it behind, they throw it high, they throw it low, they throw it to the other team. I just want to see smooth on Saturday, just smooth.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of looking at it. In baseball, when you're taking infield, you know, you start with some pretty basic grounders. Okay, first we're going to throw it to, you know, to first, and then we're going to do a double play. And like the infield practice gets increasingly more complex as you go on. And usually you end in with the outfield doing something that's probably pretty hard to do. I think Nebraska's quarterbacks would benefit from just being able to field a grounder, so to speak, and throw it to first. And what that looks like is quick throwing game. Can you get a snap out of the shotgun? Can you throw the ball to the side, sideways, to a receiver who's got a couple blockers out in front of him, and do that in stride as opposed to throwing it over his head or throwing it behind him? Can you, you know, find the tight end up the seam, which Jeff Sims did in the spring game last year. He didn't do much else during the season, but he did that. Can you, you know, on third and four, you kind of know what the routes are on third and four. It's somebody's going to get open. You got to find him. Can you make that happen? Can you, you know, make the right kind of decisions on, you know, certain second down plays, things like that? Can you get the snap? Do you not force something? Do you take a sack instead of throwing the ball into, you know, three or four men? Stuff like that. I think what I'm going to look for with Raiola, because everybody's going to be watching him, right? He's going to be in the spotlight. I think what I would say about him is he's got to make sure that his feet are doing what he wants them to do, and that he balances his playmaking ability, and he has it, that ability to improvise and to make plays off platform, as they say, you know, when he's running or when he's maybe not necessarily completely squared up, but he's got such a great arm that he's able to make a play. And just making, you know, the basic plays over and over. Raiola's going to make some plays, I think, over the course of his career that make you go, wow, does he make the plays, you know, the basic stuff? And then with Harburg, you know, just real clear, Heinrich Harburg has almost as strong of an arm as Dylan Raiola, and it might be right there. Heinrich Harburg's a really good athlete. It's never been a question of his physical ability. It is a question of, you know, whether he can stay in the pocket, whether he can deliver things on time and, you know, just make the basic plays. It's a talented kid. And I appreciate Nebraska's willingness to stick with him. Now, he may play another position at times next year, too, if Rayola and Kalen, you know, win the job. Rayola, sorry. But, you know, Harburg's got ability. And so, you know, I think they've tried to do the best they can with Clint Thomas to harness that. And that'll be the things I'm looking for. Accuracy matters. Certainly, you don't want interceptions. And who's going to throw them? You know, that'll be one of the questions I think that comes out of the spring game is who – not only who throws the touchdowns, but who throws the interceptions and why do they throw them?
So one more on the quarterback. So we went into the spring with this truth that Nebraska has three scholarship quarterbacks, two of whom are early enrollee true freshmen. And then you have Harburg, who was an 8-game starter and has been, you know, a quarterback for like a year at the college level. So the idea at the time was, will Nebraska look to the transfer portal to add at that position? Has your opinion on whether they'll do that changed? And where do you think they go with that position after the spring game in the portal, if anywhere?
Oh, I don't think that they need to get a quarterback in the portal. I think that's, you know, I think they're ready to go with these guys. That's why they were brought in, and they're gonna let them grow. Out on the field next year, and I think that's what Rule is going to do. I mean, he's all about development, and maybe there's a way to do that where those guys sit for a year and watch. But I don't get that sense. I think they're going to go with these guys, and the fact that they're, you know. To me, the offensive line is a big part of this thing Saturday. How much time are these guys going to have to throw? I don't expect Tony White to do a lot of exotic stuff and try to. And obviously, they're not going to get sacked, they're not going to get knocked down. I'm guessing maybe they will get knocked down. That would go against the sort of theme Rule has had all spring of limiting the top players, and how much they do to try to keep them healthy. But I just get the feeling if the offensive line can, if they can protect them, I think you let them go. They're not going to run them. They're not going to run. There's no quarterback running game, so. I don't think they're going to bring anybody in at this point. I don't know who you'd bring in, who's available. I don't check the portal every 5 minutes. I know it just opened up last week, but I don't know how many quarterbacks are out there that, it just seemed like it would just make it murky. It was just sort of unnecessary. The big dogs are here. Let them, you know, the big pups are here. Let them grow. Let them eat.
It's a really good question, Evan. We were sitting here having the same discussion 5 years ago when Adrian Martinez went in and had a really good spring game. And I wrote, he's the guy right after the spring game. Little did we know, you know, I think that same weekend, Joe Burrow was in the spring game for Ohio State. He goes in the portal and Nebraska did not pursue him. And I have stood by my opinion that at the time, what Nebraska knew about Burrow and what it knew about Martinez, Nebraska made the right decision. Of course, hindsight is 20/20, and you don't always know what's going to happen down the road. In hindsight, Joe Burrow would have helped Scott Frost keep his job. We just didn't know that at the time. Now, there's no way we could have known that, right? And there's no way Scott Frost could have known that. So when we look at this question, you have to consider what you know, not what you can necessarily look around the corner and see. What you know, and you know the risks of going out and getting a guy. I think that there are probably names of players that you could go get who don't threaten the guys that are there now, really, but are also interesting choices. I think of Noah Walters, who just went in the transfer portal from North Alabama. Former Lincoln East quarterback, threw for more than 4,000 yards at North Alabama over two seasons. Now he's 6 foot. He's 190. Do I think he could run this offense? I do. Yes, I think he could be pretty good at it. I don't know that he's going to come in and be, you know, challenging for the starting job. He was at D2 North Alabama for a couple of years. I could see Noah Walters going to UNK, too, and playing for the guy that recruited him to North Alabama. And that may be what Noah wants to do. He might want to come back and play at Kearney and be the bona fide starter and throw for 3,000 yards for Ryan Held and all the rest. But could he walk on at Nebraska and be your fourth or actually second string quarterback? He could, for sure. So there's names like that. There's Brendan Sullivan, who just went into the portal from Northwestern. He's not much of a thrower, but he won a game last year against Minnesota that Nebraska couldn't win. And he was a better quarterback last year than Jeff Sims. So is that a person that you ponder? Probably not, because I'll bet Brendan Sullivan knows where he's going. A lot of times these quarterbacks go in and they already know. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's certainly options. There's going to be a couple kids that leave Ohio State. They're not all staying. I guarantee you that. There's like five of them.
Right.
And they're not all staying. I mean, you know, what's his face is going to be their quarterback this year. Kid from Kansas State. Gosh, it's Will Howard or whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. Devin Brown's probably not staying. Lincoln Keenhole's probably not staying. I don't think Nebraska wants him. So, you know, I mean, there's going to be opportunities to explore here in the next 3 or 4 weeks. But the question is, you know, what threat does that put on the guys that are already in the program? Is Dylan Raiola threatened by that? No, I don't think Dylan Raiola is threatened by anyone. I don't think he would be. I don't think he'd feel threatened by Caleb Williams. You know what I mean? So, like, no to Dylan. Dylan's going to be fine. I think he will compete against anybody and think he can win. I think you got to make sure you got depth, though, for the future. You know, you have to make sure of that. So there's always question marks there, too. And so I would hope that any conversation they have about a transfer quarterback, and it is a good question, is not about Dylan. Because I think Dylan, his ceiling is higher than any ceiling in the country that we could speak of. I think the guy that has a higher ceiling is going to get picked first tomorrow night by the Bears. But outside of that, I don't think there's a ceiling that's higher than Dylan's. So you don't have to worry about that piece of it, but I do think you have to be mindful. Here's what would have happened if they had taken Burrow, by example. Tristan Jebbia would have left right away. He would have been gone. Now, they didn't want to risk that because they didn't really know what Burrow was, and they had Jebbia in the program, and they wanted to keep Jebbia around. And, of course, Jebbia burned him by leaving 1 week before the season started and going to Oregon State. But, like, you knew that if you took Burrow, the other guy was gone. He's leaving. And I think that's the thing that you have to consider. Adrian Martinez wasn't going anywhere, but Jebbia was going to leave. And of course, Jebbia left anyway. But that's the calculation. I think if they had taken, you know, Kyle McCord last year and said, hey, Kyle, we're going to roll with Kyle, and Dylan, you're going to come in, you're going to learn it. I don't know that Kalen's still there. I don't know. So I think that's probably the question that you have to navigate.
Hmm. So beyond then the quarterback position too, let's put some names out there, right? Like, we know kind of a lot of the veteran guys, and like you said, Sam, there's probably going to be a number of them that are limited or may not play, kind of following with what Rule has done. Who are some young guys, maybe a guy on each side of the ball, that you guys are looking forward to laying eyes on for the first time, maybe in a bigger role that could portend something bigger this season?
Sam, go ahead.
There's a ton. So here's one I think that is a name we already know. I think Jalen Lloyd's going to be a better football player this year. And he did some cool stuff last year, but the position that he plays, you got to do more than just break big plays. And so, you know, I think they've really worked with Jalen on his route running and getting open, you know, because a good slot receiver, kind of like J.D. Spielman was, is a guy that can shake free. It's not just straight line speed. It's working guys in the middle of the field, and it's a craft. It's not just a talent. Like, you're not born with the ability to set a slot corner up with a head fake. Like, those aren't like God given, really. So you have to learn that stuff, and it actually takes time. It takes time to get good at it. And so I think Jalen Lloyd's a guy. I think Ja'Cory Barney has a lot of natural skills that will actually suit an outside receiver position, but I think eventually he can play inside too. That's a name. And then I think they, you know, the thing I'll say about Donovan Riola is he's a pretty good recruiter. And so they've got players in their on their line. They do. They have young guys that are good players. And they don't have to play right now. They're going to have the oldest offensive line in college football, I think, if Turner Corcoran comes back and he's healthy. But he's got guys that if they had to play, they'd go out there and mix it up in a Big Ten game and look like they belong. So mostly on offense. You know, on defense, I think we kind of know a lot of the pieces. I'll be really honest with you. Bly Hill is the one. That cornerback spot is, you know, they needed a second corner, and I think they think they have one in Bly Hill. And I'm intrigued to see Mario Buford. I think he's got a chance. And Kobe Bretz, this is his spring. If Kobe Bretz is going to make a move in this program, you saw him flash a little bit late last season, but I think Kobe Bretz, the West Side grad, has a real opportunity right now, to make a move. And then at linebacker, Dylan Rogers. I've heard good things about him. Can he carry 245, 250 pounds at that position? Things that fans can think about. Is it like you want your fastest guys to be at corner and safety, and then really your second fastest guys need to be at that? People pay a lot of attention to the jack, but your off-the-ball linebackers, the guys that are 4 or 5 yards off the line of scrimmage, need to be fast because they're the guys that are often going to be unblocked at the snap, and they're the ones who have to like be able to play laterally and make plays at the line of scrimmage. Dylan Rogers can do that at 240 pounds. That's a dude, because then you don't have to – he can just sit in the box, and he's a hard guy to block if you're running right at him. And if he can run laterally at whatever weight he's at, that's a pretty good football player. So maybe they have that. It's hard to know. You just got to watch.
Yeah, a lot of good names there. I mean, Bly Hill to me is one of the most interesting. I mean, he was the least – heralded of all the transfers that came in, and there were a ton of transfers, but you know, as an FCS guy, I think he was kind of viewed as a depth piece, and to have a 6'3 guy who's maybe risen or ascended to be the starter,
he was viewed by us as a depth piece. He was not viewed that way by
sure understood
they thought they his dad played in the NFL. They thought they got an unbelievable steal. And we need to probably tell his story a little bit better. I'm somewhat familiar with it. I talked to him. I don't know what the deal was in Baltimore. I think there was a COVID and they didn't play for a year and a half or something, but the kid never should have gotten away from Maryland. It just shouldn't have happened. And he did. And then he goes, and I don't know. You know how that stuff with the portal works. He's in the portal. He's at Nebraska. It happened real fast.
Did.
So, I think they know people, you know, I don't know. It's a hell of a pickup, and it's one of those deals where Maryland's going to kick itself because I think Bly Hill's, their view of him, I don't know, what the hell do I know, but their view of him, he's really good. So I think they got fortunate. There's just no other way to, you know, I mean, and Mike Locksley recruits like a, you know, he's great. He's a great recruit. So let's not knock Mike Locksley. He's really good at his job. I just think that somehow they missed it. I don't know exactly what happened, but he should not have left the state of Maryland. Simple as that.
Yeah. A couple other quick ones I'll give you. I think Riley Van Poppel will be interesting, especially if Ty Robinson and Nash Hutmaker are both sitting out. Don't know if Prince will. Uman Mielen will be back for the spring game. So, like, it seems like a game where Van Poppel could really – pop a little bit. Oh, yeah. And then I think a lot of the skill players on offense, like you mentioned a lot of the running backs, Sam Quentin Ives and Dante Dowdell. I think seeing him in live reps, I mean, he's essentially a freshman. He appeared in 6 games as a reserve for Oregon. I think it'll be interesting. Ja'Cory Barney, if Demetrius Bell is healthy and out there, I'll be fascinated to see what he can do.
That's just a really guy. That's a guy that they want to catch and run guy. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. So
this thing with Dowdell, notably, anytime you hear somebody describe a sophomore, and he is a sophomore because he played like all last year at Oregon, as a freshman, which is what Barthel did, I don't know how high he is on the depth chart.
Yeah, maybe not. He's got the recruiting pedigree.
Well, he's not a freshman. He's a sophomore, which tells me they're like, well, he has a redshirt year. Like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of work there to do. The one thing that I got gathered out of both Rule's comments last Saturday and then what we heard from Barthel is Emmett Johnson is going to be very hard to unseat by anybody except two guys that aren't going to play in the spring game, which is Ramir Johnson and Gaber. Like, he's going to be – those three are your guys, and what they're hoping, what they're moving toward is getting all three of them healthy. And then anybody else who can help after that is gravy. But it feels like to me they're moving Ives along somewhat slowly, and Dowdell needs to show a lot in order to break into that top three. And he could be headed for a four-game year. You know, not a redshirt year can be a four-game year, and he may be headed for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's and Tom, you can weigh in on this as much or as little as you want. We'll talk a little bit of recruiting here as well. I mean, it's the game within the game. It's a major recruiting weekend for Nebraska. This is that first wave of official visitors that will be in town. We have a lot of it's a really in terms of the official visitors, really offensive themed group from a lot of recruiting hot spots in Florida and Texas and California. Some really key unofficials too. But I think, Sam, you would agree that maybe the headliner of this group, just in terms of recruiting pedigree, would be Michael Terry, the 5-star athlete out of San Antonio. I think Nebraska views him as a receiver. Is that right? That's kind of how he's projected, or tell us a little bit more about Michael Terry.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe Michael Terry is that he's got a Micah Parsons like quality, which is to say that he can play receiver, he can play running back, he can play outside linebacker, he can play safety, play really all four. And the question becomes, you know, what is he now? I think a lot of people would say he's a receiver because the school he plays for, which is a good team, they're 12-1 last year, they need to get him the ball. And so they give him the ball in lots of different contexts. But, you know, long-term, he might be an elite defender. And this is kind of the story of Micah Parsons when he was in high school. He was also a 5-star. He played running back and tight end and receiver, and they kind of had to use him that way. But when he got to college, it was evident that what his best skill set was, and you always want to, in theory, you want to put almost always your best athletes on defense because it's a reactive event. You know, he becomes one of the best players in college football, and then he becomes one of the best players in the NFL as a defender. So I think Michael Terry is being recruited as a receiver. I talked to his coach this morning, and the best way to put it is people are just open to whatever he can do. He's number 24 in On3's industry ranking. You know, that makes him a 5-star, which is, you know, really impressive. All the rest. Incidentally, he's only the number 7 player, according to On3, in the state of Texas, which tells you how damn good they are. Number 16, according to On3, number 19, according to 247 Sports. He's an incredible athlete. And, you know, Nebraska doesn't get these guys every day. They don't get these caliber players. I don't know when the last guy they had that was like that. Maybe Xavier Betts. I mean, Xavier Betts had that potential. Xavier Betts wasn't that person, you know, in terms of his focus and love for the game. But Xavier had that potential. I think Maurice Washington, also an issue there. I think this guy is better than both of them. And you know, we'll just have to see. You know, Nebraska's in it, though. Texas, USC, Nebraska, Texas A&M. Those are kind of your four. And those are all really hard schools to beat. I mean, Nebraska doesn't beat those schools very often in recruiting. They really don't. It's hard to beat those schools. A lot of those schools, two of those schools, pitch the exact same kind of value system Nebraska does. I mean, Texas, we can say whatever we want about them, but Texas kind of preaches the same stuff. And Lord knows A&M is almost like a SEC carbon copy of Nebraska. And it's culture piece. Like, you go to Texas A&M and it's all about football. So Nebraska will have to. I think Matt Rule's got a chance because he's a really good recruiter, and they're able to land some players that I don't think the previous staff, or certainly not the staff before it, would have been able to land. So yeah, pretty big deal. We'll see what happens. You know, it's rare that a 5-star comes to visit Nebraska, and this guy is a 5-star.
You're giving me flashbacks of Micah Parsons as a receiver smoking 4-star corners at Friday Night Lights in Memorial Stadium. Yeah, elite stuff.
Best high school athlete I've ever seen. I mean, and we were not there that night to watch him. We were there to watch Brendan Radley Hiles and Tristan Jebbia and a few other guys. And then Micah Parsons was there, and he was supposed to work with the linebackers, but he ended up just saying, "F it, I'm going to go run routes as a running back." There's like 7,000 people there. That was the most they ever had go, and they all walked out of the stadium going, "That's the most amazing thing we've ever seen." I mean, it was really something to behold.
So here are a few more names that are at least on track to be here this weekend. And Sam, you can comment on a couple of them if you want to. Cortez Mills, who Nebraska's been on for a while, 4-star receiver from Florida. TJ Latif, maybe Nebraska's top quarterback target from Orange, California.
For sure.
Emmanuel Choice, 4-star receiver from Lancaster, Texas. Terry Shelton, 3-star receiver from Irving, Texas. And then John Mills, interior lineman from San Francisco. And that's to say nothing of a lot of unofficials that are going to be here. Bishop Gorman has a few high-end offensive linemen who are going to be around. I talked to Chase Lofton from Millard South, the tight end, 4-star tight end. He's planning to be here unofficially at Nebraska this weekend too. So I don't know, Sam, any sort of themes or positional needs or things stand out about this group for Nebraska as it tries to make an impression?
I don't know how many of the Gorman guys are going to come. At least one of them is. And they have three, incidentally. And the one that's coming, I talked to Brent Browner, the Gorman coach, yesterday. This one's not the easiest name to pronounce, and I'm probably going to get it wrong. Alai Kalanuvalu is the one that I think is an official. And then he's got two teammates that might come with him. All of them are 4-stars. John Mills is fun. So the second highlight on John Mills, he's a tackle from San Francisco, and Nebraska likes him a lot. The second highlight on his film, he takes this defender and he drives him 15 yards out of bounds to the track and throws him on the track. And I asked him, I said, "Did you get a flag for that?" And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "We were behind and we weren't going to catch up, and I was mad." So it's pretty funny, because this kid's like, the other kid's like 200 pounds. So anyway, he's coming. And then Latif, I encourage Husker fans to go watch tape of him. He's an interesting player. Not real tall, but throws a pretty ball, spins it well, and makes quick decisions, and plays at one of these schools in California that's sort of, our colleague, the Journal Star, Luke Mullen, wrote a nice story about him. He's an interesting player for sure. And he's undersized, but I don't know that they care that much about that. He's certainly not Rayola size. I don't know. Anybody who comes here is going to have to be comfortable with knowing that Dylan Rayola is going to be there. Probably going to play here for 3 years. So, somebody's got to be prepared to come in and not play right away, because, Rayola's probably going to command the stage.
All right. So while Nebraska football has been pretty quiet in the portal thus far, they did add Vince Genitone from Montana, but basketball continues to be active. And they made a pretty interesting add here this week. Connor Essigian, former Wisconsin guard. He's got an interesting game, doesn't he? 6'4", 175 is what he's listed at. He's a 34-35% shooter from three. What do you guys make of that addition? Where does he fit in? Kind of what's his game about? How big a deal is Connor Essigian coming to Nebraska basketball?
Well, he comes off a year where he didn't have the kind of year he did the year before, but he's a proven shooter. And what I like about what Fred Hoiberg's doing is he's got the identity set. He knows what kind of team he wants to have. And now he's just going out and getting the pieces out of the portal, and he's just plugging them in. He got a big guy who can rebound, a point guard who can score, and create shots for himself and other people. And now he's got the shooter, which they lose Casey, And they lose Wiltshire. This guy's going to plug right in. So, I like that. Yeah, and he's from Wisconsin. How many Wisconsin guys come to Nebraska? So, it's a good pickup. It's intriguing. But again, he has proven. I didn't have the year last year, but I'm sure Fred is, he knows shooting, and he can coach those guys up. So it's a good pickup.
I agree with all that. Tom, I'm curious what your thoughts are on Frankie Fiddler having four finalists and going to Michigan State.
Yeah, on the surface, I'm very happy for him. I'm happy for anybody from Omaha and who played at UNO who gets a chance to go play for the Hall of Famer Tom Izzo. I mean, I'm sitting here going, I don't know if he translates to that level. You see Michigan State starting five usually, and it's guys that are all better than the guys they have at UNO. You don't expect the UNO guys to go start at Michigan State. I don't know about his defense. I mean, Izzo expects you to play defense. He's not gonna go 4-on-5 out there. He's not gonna play four guys who can play defense on five guys from some other team. All five have to be able to play defense. And he's going to have to get bigger, and he's going to have to be more physical. I mean, the practices in Michigan State are grueling, and it's almost like football practice. They really bang. And so all those things made me wonder, is he just going to be a guy off the bench who shoots threes? I mean, maybe, maybe not. Maybe he's more, so I don't know if it translates. I'm sure people at UNO are probably going, you could have been the guy here, and now you're going to go be a guy who either comes off the bench or just plays a small role. But I've been thinking about it too. I think, you know what? Tom Izzo's a pretty smart guy. Yeah, Hall of Famer. He knows a thing or two about basketball and about personnel. He wouldn't be going after Frankie Fiddler if he didn't have some kind of vision for how he's going to play and how he's going to contribute to Michigan State. So I will defer to Izzo on this and just sit back and watch and say, okay, the kid's got talent. Maybe a move up there will bring more out of him. And we've seen that with other kids. I don't think Frankie is a Baylor Shireman. But I certainly think Shireman grew at Creighton, and he became a guy who was all Big East player. I don't think was an all Big East player when he got there. I think sometimes these guys move up, and they they're forced to grow, and they're forced to either step up their game or not, and it's good for a lot of them. So we'll see if that happens with Frankie and. But this is the new reality at UNO, Sam. You're recruiting kids and developing them for probably somebody else at the end. End of the rainbow, the pot of gold, literally, is found somewhere else. And so this was a kind of litmus test for UNO. Could they raise the money? They did. Wasn't anything what you're going to find in the Big Ten level or Big East level, but they made a really hard push to keep him. Could they keep a guy away from the portal? And the answer was no. So I think you've got to turn this into a positive. You got to move on and maybe sell this to other recruits. Hey, our guy's going to Michigan State. If you come here, you'll be developed. Maybe you can go somewhere too. It sounds crazy, but you got to use it. So it's just where UNO is right now. So I don't think Chucky's going there. what I heard is he's a lean toward Louisville. We will see.
Which is,
but so it was never about this package. I don't think so. I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm a little skeptical. But again, I will defer to the Hall of Famer.
Sure, like I appreciate, you know, the dilemma that UNO is in. It's a dilemma that South Dakota State, every other program's in too. I think it's interesting that you're going to have a situation where I'm somewhat confident that Frankie Fiddler and Truckee Hepburn could have played together at Nebraska, and they're going to go to Michigan State and Louisville. Let's say Truckee Hepburn goes to Michigan State. Then it kind of, that all makes a little bit more sense because Truckee and Frankie were high school teammates. It makes more sense. I don't know that it makes total sense. But if you have a guy that goes to Louisville and a guy that goes to Michigan State, and I mean, Louisville's not going to be good. They're not going to be a good team. They're not going to be as good as Nebraska, which is a weird thing to say, but they're not. And Michigan State, I think everything that you just said about Izzo is completely accurate. He's not an easy guy to play for. And, you know, yes, can they have more success than Nebraska? Of course they can. They're very close to a blue blood, I would say. But what does it say about the relationship? And we don't need to get all the way into this. We can get into it another time. But it says something about the relationship between kids in Omaha and the University of Nebraska. Because I think Fred Hoiberg's tried. I think he's tried. And these guys are like, no, don't want to go there. I'm going to go to Louisville and start completely over with a new coach. I'm going to go to Michigan State, where I may not start. I'm going to go to USC, like St. Thomas is. I don't know if Nebraska pursued him or not. And William Kyle. Now, he went from South Dakota State. Nebraska could use William Kyle. I think that's very clear that he would fit beautifully into what Nebraska wants to get done. And if he goes to Wake Forest or he goes somewhere else, that's all fine, but then it only further impacts this idea of, like, somewhere in there, Matt Rhule has cracked open, you know, has cracked open Omaha in a way that Fred Hoiberg has not been allowed to, or the players up here don't want to go there or something. Because to me, it's just a little baffling that given everything that's going on, you'd be like, I'm going to go to Michigan State instead of Nebraska. It just, maybe it makes sense, but nobody up there is going to really know or care who he is. Whereas if he had gone to Nebraska, he would have been a star, a hero. It's interesting to me. I'm not sure exactly what the issue is, but it feels like there's still an issue.
I agree, and I don't think Fred put the effort into Omaha that maybe he is now. People in Omaha really have not seen him. So early on, he was trying to go national. He was. Abdel Nasser was not, he did not think Nebraska had great players. So I think that he may have fallen behind there, but he's trying to play catch up. Yeah, that's a good question. We don't know about the NIL package either. I don't know that the numbers I'm hearing for Chucky are like crazy.
Right.
And the numbers.
But Nebraska would have paid Baylor Shireman more.
I don't know what to believe in NIL, because I heard the numbers for Creighton on Shireman were really high. And then I was told, well, no, it was about half that. So you just don't know. NIL money is there's a lot of rumors out there, and there's a lot of shadows, and you don't know what's accurate. Because nobody's going to open up the books and nobody's going to tell the truth.
Right.
So, but.
You know, again, and Baylor Shireman made a great decision going to Creighton. He went to an Elite Eight. He went to a Sweet 16.
Right.
He's received all Big East. He's probably helped his NBA draft stock. If he goes to Nebraska, Nebraska's in the NCAA tournament two straight years, and he probably walks out of there one of the most famous players in school history. And he isn't one of the most famous players in Creighton basketball history. And that's not a knock on him. Like, he was incredible. He's probably one of my five favorite Jays ever. But he's, you know, he's not going to be compared to Bob Harstad or Doug McDermott. Whereas at Nebraska, he literally would have been like a god. And so, like, there's something there where Nebraska has to continue to work on its ability to attract local talent, even back through the transfer portal, that they have not been able to achieve. I'm not knocking Baylor. Something Nebraska needs to do better is to get to these kids and build that relationship so that they want to go to Nebraska versus going not just merely to Creighton, but to Michigan State or Louisville and Wisconsin and wherever.
Well, you got to remember when Shireman came out, Nebraska had not done anything with this current identity. They had not really done much. They weren't developing players. They're bringing them in. They're leaving.
Good point.
They weren't going to the tournament. They weren't winning. They still aren't winning in the tournament. But you know, it was an easy choice. I mean, Creighton knew how to win. They had a stacked roster. When he got there, Creighton's program was so far advanced for Nebraska, but Nebraska is catching up. They're getting things in place to make a run at these guys in the future. So maybe it was too late to get them. Maybe it was too late to get Frankie. I don't know. I think there's obviously NIL money. There's 1890 money for Nebraska basketball. You wouldn't be getting these guys out of the portal if there wasn't.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't heard why Michigan State, maybe it did not have to do with Hoiberg as much as wanting to play for Izzo or wanting to be in that kind of program that's done this. Or maybe it was money. Maybe it was all about the money. I think Frankie and Chucky probably both know their NBA options are going to be limited, if they have any. And so this is when you cash in. And that's how a lot of kids are thinking right now. So maybe it was just total business. And Michigan State, interestingly enough to me, again, Izzo knows would spend the money on a kid at UNO. Because they go all over the place and get players. They recruit nationally. So we'll be watching. We'll be pulling for them, and we'll see what happens.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You guys want to talk a little baseball here at the end?
What do you want to say, Evan? They lost the midweek game to Kansas. Will Bull has some eye-opening quotes about Drew Christo. It feels like a lot like similar seasons that they've had in the past. The only difference is they had a good non-conference schedule and they won games. Feels like a very similar team, doesn't it? Or maybe is it better than we think?
No, I think that's fair. I always think back to the regional team from 2019. They went to Oklahoma City. They beat UConn in a game that they probably shouldn't have won, but they did. They almost beat Oklahoma State in that second game. That was the game that they hit the home run in the ninth inning and came back. And then there was nothing left. Like, they had two good starters that year, and it was really hard to figure stuff out after that. And in that sense, yeah, this team is really similar to that. Like, when Brett Sears is on the mound, they can hang with just about anybody. When Mason McConaughey is on the mound, with the exception of Maryland last week, like, they've been really good. And so, like, are you going to get good Will Walsh or bad Will Walsh? Drew Christo, they've continued to put him out there this year, and he just hasn't been able to find that consistency. And then the offense is up and down, man. Like, they've had the Sunday game, they looked outstanding, stealing bases, working counts, hit and runs, a couple home runs. And then you have Tuesday against Kansas, where they're facing these arms that are 6-7 ERA arms, and Nebraska can't get anything going. And I think that's the frustrating part, is they feel like the ability's there, but it hasn't shown up day in and day out. They've lost four midweeks in a row, and they've won 8 of their 10 weekends, which I think, to your point, Sam, really accentuates the depth situation that they have. It's very similar to last year's team, except, hey, some of the teams they beat in the non-con are having pretty good years. College of Charleston is having a pretty good year. And they've kind of propped up their RPI in some respects. So, like, this is still a Nebraska team that can win the Big Ten. But I think you can probably, even though they're still a top 25 RPI team, I think you can probably shift the conversation from, hey, can this team host a regional to are they going to be a regional two or a regional three seed when it's all done here in a month?
Evan, I'm just curious about this. Wait, I got to stop comparing what we're seeing to the teams Will Bolt played for. But I wonder about the attitude. That was supposed to be the big thing. I think the attitude, certainly the determination, the grind factor, the long at bats, the wearing people down, the face full of dirt. Factor is it been there to what you expected, or you bring in Childress, you just figure that we're just going to be attitude everywhere, just guys, the whole thing. And I think there has been, but some of these games they don't fight back, and they get down early, and it just snowballs. And I just wonder if that's there to that degree, but they also bounce back too. But and maybe that's the Friday night pitcher, but I don't know. Is that am I making too big a deal out of that?
No, I mean, I think that's part of it. Like, there are certain games where they do have that edge and they come out and you can tell they're loose and ready to go. And then there are these other games, when they play Creighton in the midweek, it's just jarring to me the difference where Creighton gets up for these games, man. Like, they have no problem saying Nebraska's the rival, we want to beat them. And then you talk to Nebraska and it's very much, hey, it's another game, we're trying to stay the course, it's a marathon. And those are the games when Nebraska gets bit, and certainly it's been that way in recent years. But what's interesting then is you look on the weekends, and Creighton's struggling on the weekends because they're kind of high and low, and Nebraska tries to play even, and they've done better on the weekends. And it's a fascinating difference in mentality to me. And baseball is such a unique sport anyway. Like, you have to kind of almost pace yourself in a way, or stay present in a way that maybe you don't in other sports. But yeah, I mean, they've made some silly mistakes. Last night, they give away an out trying to tag up from second to third because the guy left early, and it just killed an inning when they were making some things happen. The Saturday game against Maryland, the game ends, it's already out of hand, and it ends when a guy gets doubled off of first on a liner to shortstop. And it's just like, man, you can tell there are examples when maybe they're not mentally engaged. I don't know why that is. I don't know why that's been a struggle, because I do think they have talent, but I think that's the frustrating part, is like, you just don't know day to day what Nebraska team you're going to get. And the record's been good enough, but I think just based on the start that they've had, there's this level of disappointment that it hasn't been better. And certainly that's shown up in the midweek for sure.
I'm going to write about this next week, and I'm sure it'll be received well, because the people in Creighton will think I'm crazy. The people in Nebraska will probably, oh, you might be right. I think the college baseball calendar is too cluttered, and we have this the midweek games after March. I think ought to go away, and I think there'll be this endless run of games against Kansas every week and Nebraska Creighton. I think the fact that you're playing three Nebraska Creighton games is too many. There's UNO and they're in there, and K-State and maybe North Dakota State or somebody State. And I just feel like I don't know if it waters down the product or the depth. I just think it'd be great to, when it's kind of like every other sport, when it's conference season, that's all you play. And not have games during the week where you can really save up for the weekend. And again, Crane people will think I'm nuts because they're making their whole resume off the midweek, and they're doing a hell of a job. But Nebraska is not. And so regardless of how people are doing, I just think there's too many games in college baseball, and maybe the teams and the product would be better. I mean, here comes Coastal Carolina flying to Omaha midweek. Now they have to go fly somewhere else home to play the weekend. And I think Nebraska has a week coming up where they play Tuesday and Wednesday, and then have to turn around and play Friday. I mean, it just seems a bit much to me. So I'll be writing about that, and I'm sure I'll be hearing from somebody.
Think it's a novel idea. I think Nebraska struggles. If I had to guess, I think their coaching staff is actually quite intense. And I think probably what I feel like might be happening, and this is just my opinion. So, yeah. I think the Nebraska goes into every game feeling like it's the favorite. And if it loses, it's their fault. And I just see a team that goes up and down a lot because, it's hard to feel like you're the better team every single time. And it would probably benefit Nebraska to be in a league. And this is absolutely true of Will Bolt's teams when he played for Dave Van Horn. Nebraska was not the favorite every week.
That's right.
I don't care about the record or what they were accomplishing. They were never the favorite when they played Texas, even if they swept Texas. Like, I think Nebraska just battles that. You know, it's just hard. It's hard to get up for every single game. I think, you know, his comments about Drew Crystal last night, I thought were fair, you know, not good enough. Obviously, they're frustrated with the inconsistency. I do think that these coaches try to get toughness, and I think it's tough in this generation at this moment with these kids to always get what you could get out of Will Bolt and, you know, whoever was on those teams, you know, John Gross, whoever, like, just a different generation, and I think it's hard. I think Nebraska is probably a pretty good team, and if you put them out there and said, "Hey, put them against an SEC schedule," they wouldn't obviously win the SEC, but they'd probably do okay. I think it's hard when you're a favorite every single weekend, and these teams are, you know, not bad. They have baseball players too, and you have to go beat them. And I think Nebraska football struggled with the same thing. It's finally gone now. I think Nebraska football is no longer considered a favorite, but we saw it at the end of last year, didn't we? When they played Michigan State and Maryland. They knew they should have won those games, and they did not win those games. Their offense played horrible. So, anyway, we can be done.
That sounds good. Well, I hope everyone enjoys the spring game this weekend. Baseball, the weather should be good, I think, for all that. So it's going to be fun for Tom and Sam. I'm Evan. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to, I'm sure, not overreact in any way to what we see in the spring game. Thanks, Husker fans.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.